Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for joining us back here on the show, where we don't take calls and we don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help to focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And here we are, victims of the oppressive tax regime of the state and federal government. Yes, working on taxes. It's depressing. It's hard work. Don't even want to bring it up. We'll change the subject immediately. We'll go to, how about Ancient Aliens? That's always good to, for a pick-me-up. Ancient Aliens, the other night, my extremely attractive audio engineer and I were watching Mario Antoinette and the others, the other ancient astronaut theorists on Ancient Aliens, and they posited the theory that the moon is possibly the creation of some extraterrestrial intelligence, and that it was placed there on purpose in precise location by said extraterrestrial intelligence. And then they went on to define and describe and theorize about every type of extraterrestrial intelligence, except the one that in fact did create the moon and put it in its precise location on purpose. The thing about a show like that is that it's on the History Channel, and that younger people may look at that and think that it is actual history. And of course, you've heard my theory that as the Big Bang Theory and Darwinian evolution collapse into the dustbin of history, they will be replaced by, you guessed it, aliens! Yes. Anyway, it cracked me up to watch these fools. But a good time was had by all because, well, we're not young and foolish and godless and gullible enough to believe it was some kind of space aliens. We know where the moon came from, as a matter of fact. Maybe we should shoot off a letter to Mario and his boys and give them a clue as to where the moon came from. Now, I must fall on my sword because Hillary Clinton is, in fact, the Democrat nominee in the election for the President of the United States. I had predicted she would not be, but she is. And this simply proves that I am far too naive regarding the depth of depravity amongst the Democrat electorate. It knows no bottom. Democrats are, they're a self-loathing lot. They actually prefer to support someone they hate if it means keeping their conscience free of any hint of responsibility for destroying themselves and their neighbors and the country. And so here we sit with Hillary, quite possibly, to be elected the next president of the United States. But the depths of stupidity, did I say depravity? I may have meant stupidity. The depths of stupidity run deep on both sides of the aisle because just this past week, here I have the story from the gullible evangelical file. Franklin Graham, the son of Billy Graham, is urging Christians to vote for Donald Trump in order to avoid Christian death camps. He played the Christian death camp card. That's right. Do I have a quote? I have a quote here from Franklin Graham. By the way, he's the son of preacher Billy Graham. And he says, "We won't survive 4 more years of Democrat-led government." I remember hearing that for the first time in 1996 when Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton was running for re-election. And I was told that the nation simply could not survive another 4 years of Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton, and therefore I was obligated to vote for Bob Dole. Now, I don't remember the Christian death camps card being played, but I do remember the re-education camp under Denver International Airport. That was the big news, that Bubba Biljeff was going to round up all the Christians and put us lock us up under DIA. And as far as I know, that hasn't happened yet. But we have to check with Mario Antoinette and find out. Is it possible that Denver International Airport was actually the creation of some extraterrestrial intelligence placed at its specific location so that the Democrat Party could round up Christians and lock us in death camps? And of course, the only hope against the death camps or ending up under the airport at this point, apparently, is Donald Trump. Let's see. Franklin goes on to say, I can see them rounding Christians up and putting us in death camps unless we want to grant special rights to gays and transgender people. Special rights. I think that's an interesting choice of words on the part of Reverend Graham. We're not being asked to grant special rights to homos and trannies. We've been bamboozled into granting them equal rights. And you and folks like you in the evangelical hierarchy are the ones who have been so friendly with them, not realizing 20, 30 years ago that if you threw in your lot and said that the homosexuals and the trannies and the other deviant sex perverts were normal and should have equal rights, that eventually they would turn on you and scare you into thinking they were going to round you up and throw you into a death camp. And you end up running into the arms of a naked charlatan like Donald Trump. It's just embarrassing. Does Franklin have anything else to say? Oh, yes, here we go. A classic. Christians need to vote for Trump. He embodies our values. Okay, he doesn't share our values, but he embodies them somehow, which is an interesting perspective from the right reverend. Yes, indeed. Oh, by the way, has anyone noted the irony that Hillary Clinton's running mate is Kane? I noticed that. I said Kane. I think his name is Tim Kane or Jeff Kane, Biff Kane. I can't remember the guy's name. I never heard of this guy. Never seen him before, never heard of him. I can tell you this, he looks like the victim of a bad plastic surgeon. And if he hasn't had plastic surgery, then, well, he's just got problems. He looks like he was created, stitched together out of three or four washed up old liberal politicians by a very poorly skilled plastic surgeon. The Hillary Kane ticket. Indeed, the irony. It's deep. I think Drudge noted it. I think he had the headline, Clinton Runs with Kane. So there. All right. I'm willing to admit I was wrong. I'm willing to admit I was naive. I am naive. And let's just move on. Let's get past the fact that my prediction failed. And let's move on to the personhood file, where the Weekly Standard is reporting that Elise Hoag, the president of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, made an appearance at the Democrat National Convention, as you can well imagine she would. And on the stage, on the dais, Ms. Hoag shouted out to the gathered masses of assorted liberals and fellow travelers and socialists and communists, homosexuals, trannies, and other deviant perverts. She shouted, quote, to succeed in life, all we need is the chance to chart our own path. When I found out I was pregnant years ago, it was the wrong time. I made the decision to have an abortion and get compassionate care at a clinic in my own community. Now, years later, my husband and I are parents of two incredible children. So can I rephrase that? For Ms. Hoag. It was the wrong time. I made the decision to kill that child and get compassionate care at yada, 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 yada. Anyway, when she said she chose to have an abortion, the crowd exploded in uproarious applause and approval for her shouting of her abortion. But had she said what she really did, do you think they would have cheered had she said, "I made the decision to kill that child and get compassionate care. Now, years later, my husband and I are parents to two incredible children that we didn't kill." Maybe that would be her applause line if she actually said what she had actually done. And so we're going to get to the redefinition of what it means to be pro-life, because apparently Cain is pro-life. Or I should say, Cain says he's pro-life. And we'll get to some of that, the redefinition of the term pro-life, a little bit later in the program. But let's go now to the science file, where tourists in Florida are being warned to avoid unprotected sex in Florida because of the Zika virus. Yes, they had 4 cases of Zika. They've tested mosquitoes all over the state of Florida. They haven't found a single mosquito test positive for Zika, but now they have 4 cases. And they're telling males who show symptoms of the virus, they're saying they should refrain from unprotected sex for a full 6 months to avoid onward transmission of the disease. This is according to the Telegraph out of the United Kingdom. And just further evidence that my extremely attractive and insightful audio engineer saw from the get-go, that this is just another venereal disease is what it is. Or at least that's what it will devolve into. Because most of these diseases come to us from the animal kingdom one way or another. And then they degenerate into just your basic venereal disease. And so if you're going to go to Florida or you're going to Rio de Janeiro to be terrorized at the Olympics, then you should, they don't say to avoid sleeping around, do they? No, they just say that you should wear a condom. That's it. That's their workaround on that one. Yeah, what's that? Yeah. Well, I guess that's all there is to say about that. And so the powers that be will never tell people the truth that you should just not sleep around, that's all, because you might get sick. You might catch a disease. But no, they have a record number of condoms being shipped down to the athletes in Rio, and they will encourage everyone to partake. They'll probably have 55-gallon drums full of them at the entrance to the Olympic Village. And maybe that will stop the terrorists. They'll trip over the barrels of condoms as they attack. We hope that that does not happen in Rio. We hope the terrorists do not attack. Let's go. We need some good news, right? You want to hear some good news? I have some good news. From the Houston Chronicle, there is an X-rated expo. It's like a trade show for pornographers down there in the state of Texas. And the Chronicle reports that for the second time in 2 weeks, the organizer of the Pornography Expo in Houston has been notified that his booking contract has been terminated at area hotels. It would seem that the hotels in the city of Houston, Texas, are telling the pornographers that we don't want your business, and they keep canceling their venues. The most recent cancellation was by the Hilton Houston Southwest in the Galleria. They canceled the August 17 to 20 booking, and they say they canceled due to concerns raised by a national advocacy group. I'm sorry, that's what the organizer says. The organizer of the Pornography Expo says that there's a vast right-wing conspiracy of sorts against him and his fellow pornographers, and that they're being chased all over the city of Houston in hopes that they will abandon their efforts to host their pornography festival there. And Hilton canceled them. Now, Hilton released a statement saying that the decision was made in the best interest of other hotel guests. Indeed. Now, Hilton could not come out and say something as politically incorrect as, "Look, we don't want to host a pornography convention at our hotel. We have some standards. We have wives and children ourselves, and we don't want to be involved in this." No, they just said that the decision was made in the best interests of other hotel guests, and that's probably the best you can hope for from the corporate world. And even if they stumbled backwards into the right decision, We thank the folks over at Hilton for that decision. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Good to have you aboard. I want to go now more from the Democrat National Convention. Speaking of pornography, indeed, it was on display. Very embarrassing week for the Democrats. Just to parade all those hapless, moronic, robotic fools on television. But we've got a report here from the Daily Caller reporting that an internal DNC memo published by WikiLeaks, fellow travelers, socialists, but they still have enough self-respect to hate Hillary Clinton. In the memo, a party staffer complained to colleagues that one of the Democrat Party's biggest gay donors was just too high maintenance for her to handle. Yeah. Apparently, this staffer in the memo talks about work that she or he or it has been doing with the Democrat Party's LGBT Leadership Council. And the memo contains information on dozens of donors, not all of which is positive, according to the Daily Caller. The staffer complains that one donor named Darren Glimpf is extremely high maintenance. I found him to be too much work for what he's worth. He'll probably only write a $5,000 check. I mean, really, is it worth it? Kind of embarrassing. So everyone's wondering who leaked these emails, who hacked, who leaked. I think it's more appropriate to ask who leaked rather than who hacked. How do we even know they were hacked? I mean, we do have a murdered DNC staffer in Washington, D.C., Seth Rich. Found beaten, strangled, and murdered in Washington, D.C. His wallet, his watch, his phone were all on him, and he's laying there dead in an upscale neighborhood in Washington, D.C. His name was Seth Rich. I mean, who's the more likely culprit in the leaking of Democrat National Committee emails? Is it Vladimir Putin's FSB, or is it a DNC insider who maybe felt the burn and was upset that his communist leader, nut job Bernie Sanders, was basically run out of the Democrat nomination by the evil, corrupt, and wicked Hillary Clinton and all of her minions and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and all of those people. I mean, who's got more on the line? Vladimir? Or an upset group of young 30-something Democrats who really had hoped that their socialist utopia was within reach with Uncle Bernie Sanders. And anyway, the guy's dead face down in Washington, D.C. Nobody seems to know why. It's very interesting to think about. Anyway, but the media, the mainstream, we call them the medstream media, because we know they have to all be on drugs, because nobody can be that stupid, foolish, and misleading. So we assume that they're on, we give them the benefit of the doubt, and we assume that they're on drugs. They have loyally parroted the line that it's the Russians working in cahoots with Donald Trump to embarrass the Democrat National Committee. And don't look at the dead DNC staffer face down over there. Just ignore that, folks. We know who it is. It's Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin who have hacked the DNC and now have released all this to WikiLeaks. And anyway, it's somewhat interesting, but I guess it's not that interesting. Let's move on now to how it is that Cain can call himself pro-life. He can do that because the definition of pro-life has been successfully redefined. From our personhood file, we have a report from Breitbart citing a poll. Let's see. They say that recent polling shows that a majority of Americans agree with Trump-Pence on the issue of abortion. Americans use the term pro-choice to describe their abortion views, but Breitbart says that term is misleading. Because 78% of Americans believe in substantial restrictions to abortions. Well, let's just call it what it is. 78% of Americans believe in substantial restrictions on killing innocent children. Now let that sink in for a second. That's almost 80% of the people who are for killing some innocent children. And if you're for killing some innocent children but against killing some others, that now qualifies you as pro-life, and therefore Cain can stand up next to Hill and feign the idea that he's pro-life, and he can get by with it in the Democrat Party. But the fact is, the Republicans have been getting by with it in the Republican Party for the better part of 30 years. Let's see, this poll shows there is significant support for banning taxpayer dollars from being spent killing innocent children. 78% of Americans agree that abortion mills where innocent children are butchered and killed and then parted out piecemeal on the open market, they should be sanitary. There should be sanitary requirements. That's nearly 80% of people. 70% of people agree that doctors who butcher and tear apart innocent children should have admitting privileges at the local hospital. And that makes them pro-life, apparently. Summarizing the poll, some airhead said, quote, "The majority of Americans in favor of abortion restrictions has been consistently around 8 and 10 for the better part of a decade." So the term pro-life and being pro-life has been being successfully redefined down for about a decade. And about 80% of people, you have to remember, folks, if you answer a poll this way, when you say there should be restrictions on killing certain children, or you have an opinion on how they should be killed, or how clean the utensils should be that are used to rip their bodies apart, how clean should the scalpel be used to cut out the heart that you're going to sell? If you have an opinion on that, then you have to understand that that opinion includes your consent to the murder of innocent people. And you are not pro-life. A pro-life person is someone who is against killing any innocent people, especially children, but any innocent people. And there just aren't that many of us left, apparently. And the Democrats apparently seem to think that if they have a nominally pro-choice vice presidential candidate, that will help them with in some way, which I can't comprehend it. The Democrat Party is so maniacally pro-child killing that I don't see how it could make any difference to anybody. But whatever, Hillary needs some kind of fig leaf. I don't understand it. So she runs with Cain, who says he is a pro-life Democrat, and that there are one or two instances in which he would not kill innocent children. And therefore, he qualifies in the brave new world as pro-life. All right. Which is, well, it's where we're at. That's what it is. It's where we are. And it's commentary on the state of a falling civilization, a descending civilization, descending into violence, bloodshed, and murder. So I preached a sermon at Denver Bible Church this morning. And I didn't talk about politics or child killing or anything like that. But I did note that it's pretty rough out there. Just in Denver over this past weekend, this weekend, there were a half a dozen people shot. At least three killed that I know of. And that's just an average weekend in the average metropolitan area in any given part of the country. Half a dozen, maybe a dozen shot, several killed. And that it's, if you think it's bad out there, it's actually worse than you think.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. I got the bat signal about 7 o'clock on Saturday evening that the pastor of Denver Bible Church, our pastor Bob, was trapped like a caged animal in Detroit at the airport, unable to return to Colorado, and that he needed someone. And so I did a little experiment. I did no preparation whatsoever, save when I woke up this morning, I said a prayer and I said, Lord, help me figure out what I'm going to say, since I've done no preparation whatsoever. And he pointed me to the Bible, imagine that. And I grabbed a few verses to establish the fact that the responsibility for educating and raising children is extremely important in the eyes of God. And once I established that, I just went on and I gave the adults at Denver Bible Church a sample of what we do at the children's church at Denver Bible Church, because I teach the children's church whenever I'm in town. And so we had a great time. And the nice thing about working with kids is you don't need a lot of preparation because they take the pressure off. I had a couple of the kids come up on stage, and it was just a lot of fun. And I made a statement at church that I'm going to make now, and it will be borne out over the next few decades as to whether or not I'm correct or not. But I told the children that if you will pay attention here at Denver Bible Church, that when you go forth from this church to start your own family or move away and go to another church, just go out into the world at the age of 18 or at the age of 20 or whenever it is you decide to go out into the world, that if you pay attention, the average Denver Bible Church kid at the age of 18 or 20 will be more biblically literate at 18 than the average evangelical community church pastor at age 60. If you just pay attention, kids. And then we went through the lesson, and I think that will be true. I had to comment on, who did I watch last night? The guy who buys time after Saturday Night Live. Andy Stanley, son of, listen, Charles Stanley, listen. Who I enjoyed a lot of Charles Stanley's preaching over the years. His son Andy, not so much. That's the way it goes. The average Denver Bible Church child at the age of, say, 14, should know more than Andy Stanley about the Bible. That's all right, I'll say 18, just to give Andy some breathing room. We'll just see about that. So that's my prediction going forward for the children of Denver Bible Church. Now, I want to mention this briefly. This is from the Just a System file. The BBC is reporting that Reagan assassin, or attempted assassin, John Hinckley Jr., is to be released. Apparently, he's already been spending half the month at his mom's house in Virginia. They say he's under strict conditions, whatever that means. But now a judge has ruled that Hinckley, who is now a portly 61-year-old grandfather type, can now reside full-time with his mom on convalescent leave starting on the 5th of August. I want to remind you people that James Brady died in 2014 at the age of 73, and his death was ruled a homicide directly related to the injuries inflicted by John Hinckley Jr. But prosecutors in the Just a System chose not to file any further charges against Hinckley because it would just be too much paperwork. A lot of paperwork involved. And now U.S. District Judge Paul Friedman points to a medical assessment which shows that John Hinckley Jr. has no symptoms of active mental illness and has had none since 1983, and the judge says that Mr. Hinckley no longer poses a danger to himself or others, I want to say to U.S. District Judge Paul Friedman, you are wrong, sir. By releasing John Hinckley Jr., you have established the fact right here in the United States of America that you can shoot the President of the United States and get away with it. And you're going to tell me that that does not pose a clear and present danger? I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Glad to have you here. A clear and present danger. The release of a presidential assassin. And I know Hinckley didn't kill Reagan, but that doesn't matter. He shot him. That makes him an assassin. He should have been put to death, but instead he's going to be released. And everybody's going to see that from the youngest to the oldest. In front of God and everybody, they're going to release a presidential assassin. It's shocking. Now let's get back to the moon. I told you earlier that the geniuses at Ancient Aliens posit the idea that the moon could have been created by some extraterrestrial intelligence and then placed in its specific location. Well, here's an interesting story from the LA Times. This is a couple weeks ago, but it relates to what we've been talking about. Apparently, this is from the Science File. The gravitational tug between the sun and the moon can trigger earthquakes in the San Andreas Fault. Yeah, they've been measuring this stuff. They say the surface of the earth goes up and down with the tides, flexing the crust and stressing faults. And a recent study found that during certain phases of the tidal cycle, small tremors deep underground, known as low-frequency earthquakes, were more likely to occur. I've got a quote here from Nicholas van der Elst of the U.S. Geological Survey. He's a geophysicist, a lead author of the new study. And he says this, quote, "It's kind of crazy, right?" Unquote. Not the most scientific of reactions, but he does go on to get a little more scientific. He says, it's kind of crazy, right, that the moon, when it's pulling in the same direction that the fault is slipping, causes the fault to slip more. What it shows is that the fault is super weak, much weaker than we would expect, given that there's 20 miles of rock sitting on top of it. So the moon is so precisely placed in its location by this extraterrestrial intelligence that it has a direct effect not only on the tides, but also on the geology of the Earth. I think Mario Antoinette asked the question, is it possible that the moon was placed where it is by extraterrestrial intelligence in order to help or preserve or perhaps even observe the Earth? Now, they went on to say that the moon is quite likely hollow and it's full of aliens with telescopes, spaceships, things like that. And they kind of lost me at that, but anyway. So the moon is right where it needs to be, and I think it's possible that this extraterrestrial intelligence, possibly, in the scriptures we read that the extraterrestrial intelligence that we'll call, let's call him God. Let's just, for the sake of argument, that God reserved waters in the earth for judgment. And then he used them during the great flood. And I think it's quite possible that the way that God created the universe, that if the universe broke, if sin entered and rebellion against the Creator entered into the universe, that the entire universe would now be set and reserved for judgment against mankind. And hence, we have earthquakes. The earth is very unstable because it's very young, and it's been through some catastrophic events. So that now even the moon, which sustains life on the earth by enforcing the tidal cycle, but the moon also is part of the judgment because it's putting stress on the fault lines, and the big one is going to come, and well, there you have it. Okay. Now, I talked earlier about a Democrat National Committee. What I don't remember what he was. A staffer, whatever that is. What's a staffer? Is that someone who's paid to show up and push papers around? I don't know what a staffer is. I've never had a staffer. I've never hired a staffer. I'm not sure what that job description entails. But it sounds like a make-work, made-up job. So that... Not to impugn the integrity of this fine young man who was working for the Democrat National Committee when he was unfortunately murdered. We don't want to impugn his character any further than the fact that he worked for the Democrat National Committee. That is impunity enough. And we'll leave it at that. But I said that perhaps he had felt the burn. And he felt Bernie got shafted and he leaked all the emails to the perverts over at WikiLeaks. And it was all part of his hissy fit, or if not him, then maybe some other staffers in the Democrat National Committee. Because let's face it, folks, staffers probably don't have a lot to do but sit around and talk gossip about everything, and they were feeling the burn and they got upset. I'm just saying it's a possibility. I don't know. Well, one thing I do think is that if we were to find out how many politicians, both Republican and Democrat, are hiding their activities on private email servers and through various nefarious dark channels, we would probably all be shocked. Because I think that most of them are pocketing massive amounts of money while they destroy the country on both sides of the aisle, and they're hiding it and covering up, and that's why Hillary was let off the hook, is because they're all doing it. I shouldn't say they're all doing it. A lot of them are doing it. A significant plurality of them are doing just what Hillary did, because it makes it a lot easier to steal money if you keep it all on the dark web. Anyway, this DNC staffer, no doubt there's a lot of staffers at the DNC who were feeling the burn and felt jilted when they had to move and declare their vote for Hillary Clinton rather than crazy old Uncle Bernie there. So I just want to let you folks who feel the burn, I want to let you know where the burn leads, because they're feeling the burn in Venezuela. In Venezuela, the government is now conscripting workers, basically putting people into forced labor in order to prevent the utter collapse of civilization. And I saw this video a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to revisit this. The money section over at CNN reported that pregnant women, children, and even elderly Venezuelans are crossing into Colombia. The border was temporarily reopened by Colombian officials, allowing some poor Venezuelans to go into Colombia just to buy basic food, foodstuffs and toiletries, because they're now very rare commodities there in Venezuela. Tearful Venezuelans had gone weeks without basic food items when they went into the nation of Colombia just to buy some food. This was a couple of Sundays ago. And now in Venezuela, by the way, Venezuela's been run by socialists for a couple of decades. And food shortages are now a common part of daily life, according to the reporters at CNN. They say Venezuela is expected to dive deeper into the abyss this year. Are you feeling the burn? People are dying in ill-equipped hospitals, and they live without basic food items. Venezuela can't pay to import goods because its government is desperately strapped for cash. After years of what? What do you think the urinalists at CNN are going to blame the problems of Venezuela on? Yes, they say Venezuela is desperately strapped for cash because of mismanagement and poorly run government programs. What is the deal with the modern day urinalists always implying that socialism, while it is failing right before our eyes, we are watching Venezuelans perish from starvation. And yet they imply that this socialism has failed because of poor management. The urinalism schools, I think, they brainwash these children who are now reporting the news that socialism can work, it will work, it must work, it has to work, it just hasn't been managed properly yet. Even though we've been trying since the days of Nimrod, like 4,500 years ago. For 4,500 years, we have been trying to figure out how to manage the socialist thing. We just haven't figured out yet, but it's just poor management. The fact is, you cannot run a government based on stealing money. Stealing money from productive people and giving it to non-productive people, causing the non-productive people to become more less productive. So the socialism hurts the poor even more than it hurts the rich. And socialism doesn't work because it's poorly managed. It shouldn't be rejected because we haven't figured out how to manage it yet. We're just not altruistic enough. There's just too much greed in the world. It should be rejected because God said, "You shall not steal." And that goes for the government as well as for you and me and our children. Let's see. Venezuela owes about $5 billion in a string of bond payments coming due this fall. Experts believe the chance of default is very high. Meanwhile, there's a video. I think I can link to it in this article where you can watch Venezuelans looking at a fully stocked store shelf and they're weeping. They're crying. Are you feeling the burn? Because that's where the burn leads. Burn it all down, baby. Socialist fools. Idiot children. Suicidal idiot children. At the highest reaches of power around the world. It's unbelievable. Now, let's go to the San Diego Tribune from the Civil War file. We have the war file here. But we have now opened a new file called the Civil War file. San Diego police. A gang detail officer, three officers were making a traffic stop in San Diego late last Thursday night, and they were shot several times. One was killed. It appears that this wasn't an organized attack inspired, say, by the Black Lives Matter movement or anything like that. This was just your average gangbangers who are encouraged now by the fact that cops are being shot by other lowlifes. And so instead of being scared of the police, they shot the police. And they killed one of them. And this is going to lead to civil war. Hey, I want you people to start noticing something that I started noticing last week. That you never see a single cop car pulling anyone over anymore. It's always one, it's always two or three police cars. Just to make a traffic stop. So what do you think that's going to do to our police? So we've doubled or tripled the burden on the police. And because the government refuses to enforce the law properly, and there is an epidemic of crime, things are going to come apart at the seams quite quickly. And what is the answer? Is it more police? Can we avoid this civil war by hiring more police? No. No, that's not going to work because there's just far too many criminals. And there are far fewer and fewer people willing to take on the responsibility of policing because they're afraid for their lives. What the government needs to do is properly enforce the law. They should execute those who are guilty of capital crimes. And then we wouldn't need so many police, and they wouldn't have to pair up or triple team every car they pull over for speeding. And we might be able to avoid the coming civil war. I think the hand clap really gets enough play. You know, the hand clap, they work that in nicely. I wonder if they even do that anymore. Pat Benatar-ish. Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Yeah, Joan Jett-ish. Anyway, who was that? What was that you're playing? Extremely attractive audio. Sneaking in some 90s keyboard stuff. I thought we had a rule against that. Anyway, but the hand clap made up for the keyboards. So that's why you're going to get away with that one. All right, not to make light of the Civil War, ladies and gentlemen, but if you sit around and you just think about this stuff all the time, you'll make yourself crazy. And so you have to do two things. Number one, don't worry yourself into fear. But number two, you have to stand up and speak the truth and don't be afraid to do it. I had a colleague. We were talking about children and life and politics and the law and order and whatnot as we were driving around. She said to me, you know, it's almost as if the powers that be and the media and the government, it's almost as if they want the children to believe the wrong things. And I said, you know, it's much more diabolical than that. They want the children. That's what they want. They want your children. They want my children. And they are actively working to take them away from us every day. And I got into why we homeschool and whatnot. I really feel bad for people when they ask about my kids. And I tell them that we homeschool our children, and that lays an immediate guilt trip on just about everybody. And it really makes the rest of the conversation somewhat awkward and cumbersome, because I don't mean to lay a guilt trip on you. That's not my intention. You just asked me what the deal is with what grade is your kid, and whatever. Where does your kid go to school? And now you force me to say something that makes you very uncomfortable. And I'm sorry. But maybe you should think about why you feel so uncomfortable. And I did let her know that it is the government schools that is the mechanism by which those powers that be that she can see are bad. She can tell they're bad. I said, you know, it's the government schools that have been designed to separate you from your child. That's what they're all about. All right, now, let's move on, and we will plumb the depths of the fruit of socialism and godlessness in the domestic tranquility file. I guess this would be the international tranquility file, unless you live in Japan. And since we have family members who live in Japan, it's somewhat domestic to us because we have family there. The BBC reports that 19 residents were killed in a knife attack this past week in the Japanese city of Sagamihara. And then the next line is weird. This strikes me as odd, the way the Urinalist is reporting this. The next line says, such attacks are extremely rare in Japan. The incident is the worst mass killing in decades. Do you have to point out that someone butchering 19 people is rare? And why would that be the point? Why would you even mention that it's rare? Maybe because it's not rare in America. So the BBC's like, maybe. I just didn't get that. I mean, I could see you saying it was horrifying, terrifying, awful, but rare? Anyway, I have a thing about urinalism, and I pay attention to their words, maybe more than I should. But police arrested the man. He actually turned himself in. The murderer reportedly said that he wanted people with disabilities to disappear. This is a 26-year-old Japanese fella who sent letters to politicians some months ago. He actually wrote letters to politicians in which he threatened to kill hundreds of disabled people. Here's a line from one of the letters he wrote to some local politicians. He wrote, quote, "My goal is a world in which the severely disabled can be euthanized with their guardian's consent if they are unable to live at home and be active in society." Wow. That's chilling. Now, to normal people like you and me, we look at that and we say, this guy is evil. This is one evil maniac. But he sounds like a man inspired by Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, whose one of her stated goals was to eliminate the disabled. Maybe this fella, maybe he will get the nomination for the 2016 Margaret Sanger Award for efforts on behalf of advancing Margaret Sanger's worldview. Perhaps. I can tell you one thing that will not happen to this person in the next 12 months. He will not be executed. That I can guarantee. There's a better chance that he's nominated for the Margaret Sanger Award and appears at a Planned Parenthood fundraising dinner than the chance that he will be executed by the hapless, moronic, socialist, godless government of Japan. That government, by the way, a direct descendant of the United States of America, simply descending into chaos, hellfire, and damnation faster than America. That's all. Japan is like the bastard child of godless America. All right. Now we go. This is unbelievable. The Daily Mail, I pulled this story down earlier in the week. A priest beheaded. And now, not to put too fine a point on urinalism, but I have to do this. The Daily Mail reporter writes, a priest has been beheaded by two ISIS knifemen. I had never heard the term knifeman before. Is anyone else familiar with that term? I don't understand. It's as if this knife went and grabbed a guy, and the knife man cut off the head. It's the urinalist's ingrained tendency to remove blame from anyone. A knifeman? No, it's plural, knife men. Anyway, I just never heard that term before. Catholic priest, 86-year-old Jacques Hamel, was beheaded in his church near Rouen in Normandy. At 9 o'clock in the morning during church services. Now, there are reports circulating that one of the killers was a local resident who was under electronic surveillance and had been jailed for trying to travel to Syria in 2015 and for some reason was walking the streets of Normandy, which I cannot comprehend how that happens in this day and age. How is it that you try to fly to Syria? You're obviously an Islamist, and you are not arrested and executed. Is anybody paying attention to what's going on? It would seem common sense that it's time for us to start killing the jihadis, and even the aspiring jihadis. If this is something you want to do, or you're a fan of, or you like it, you should be executed. You shouldn't be walking the streets. Yeah, and I don't think we should deport them. No. Well, they're going to go kill people somewhere else. The governments of Europe and the United States should take the responsibility of executing those who are Islamists. That's all. This guy got out on bail, and it allowed him to be unsupervised between 8:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m., and so he cut off the priest's head at 9 o'clock in the morning while he was unsupervised. So it's nobody's fault. It's just unfortunate that he was unsupervised. Had the bureaucracy been on its toes, this is really just a clerical error, is what happened here. And don't think that I miss the irony that this is Normandy. Normandy is where the civilized world launched its final assault on the last version of these type of subhuman maniacs. And now in Normandy, the subhuman maniacs have struck back at us successfully. And it's all just a clerical error, is what you've got there. Meanwhile, in Roslindale, Massachusetts, a Boston suburb, I believe, a young woman was working at her convenience store gas station in Boston, the Boston area, last Sunday morning, when about 25 teenagers, a flash mob, suddenly came in all at once just after midnight into her store. They grabbed drinks, candy, ice cream, and anything they could get their hands on and stuff into their baggy pants. And in less than 1 minute, they all left without paying for anything. So a flash mob scene in a Boston suburb, and so this type of thing should shock the nation that this would happen. And the fact that we're not shocked by this anymore should be a signal as to how callous we have been forced to become in the face of such a torrent, a never-ending epidemic of violent crime. And one of the lessons we went over in Children's Church at Denver Bible Church this morning was that covetousness is the root of sin, which is the root of crime, and that if you are willing to steal something, if you are willing to take something that is not yours, and especially if you are willing to take it by force, eventually you will murder someone. And that's not me saying that, that's what God says. And so we've got flash mobs. These are all products of your government schools. Thank you very much. Now, fact, reason number 1051, in no particular order, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. We go down the road a little bit to Salem, Massachusetts, where the leaders of the Satanic Temple are plotting to bring their wisdom to the nation's public elementary schools. Yes, this is from the St. Louis Tribune. They report that because Christian evangelical groups have infiltrated the lives of America's children through after-school religious programming in the public schools, that the Satanic Temple wishes to do the same. The group plans to introduce its after-school Satan Club, starting in Prince George's County, Virginia, next year. Now, the Satanists insist that their curriculum in their after-school Satan Club isn't actually about promoting worship of the devil. They say they don't even believe in the devil. They don't believe in the existence of anything supernatural. They say they reject all forms of supernaturalism. And the head of the group is a gentleman. Let me get his name here. Doug Mesner is the Satanic Temple co-founder, but he goes by the professional name of Lucian Greaves, because a Satanist named Doug, it's just not very intimidating, you know? Doug seems like kind of a goofy-looking guy with glasses who's always a little bit, you know, uncomfortable, kind of awkward, not very coordinated. Doesn't exactly strike fear into the hearts. But when you put on the, you know, slick back your black hair with grease and call yourself Lucian Greaves, now that sounds like a Satanist. He says, Lucian Greaves says, Satan is just a metaphorical construct intended to represent the rejection of all forms of tyranny over the human minds. That's his story, and he's sticking to it. And I guess that's just reason 1051 to get or keep your kids out. By the way, just a quick note. The Satanic Temple has chapters all over the country. And the chapter head of the Utah Satanic Temple goes by the professional name Chalice Blythe. It's some guy named Jeff. Chalice Blythe and Lucian Greaves. We are here. All right. Now, finally, ladies and gentlemen, from the They're Not All Heroes file. Yes, they're not all heroes. According to a congressional notification obtained by USNI News, which I believe is a naval news outlet, a notification was signed by Secretary of the Navy Ray Mabus announcing that the Navy intends to name a military ship after Harvey Milk. Do you know Harvey Milk? He's an openly homosexual pedophile city councilman, murdered by a fellow city councilman back in 1978. He was the first open... Oh, he was a Navy man, by the way. Reinforcing the old stereotype promoted by the likes of Winston Churchill that the Navy runs on sodomy, rum, and the lash. Anyway, Milk was a Navy man, actually served as an officer during the Korean War. He was honorably discharged from the service. He was the first openly homosexual politician to be elected. And now he was open about his homosexuality, but he generally kept his pedophilia somewhat under wraps, as was the common practice even in San Francisco in the 1970s. It was something of an open secret in the San Francisco community, but his pedophilia has been lost to history. He was murdered. The guy who murdered him then killed himself after he got out of prison. The famous Twinkie defense and all that. Harvey Milk wrote a letter to President Carter on behalf of Jim Jones. Do you remember Jonestown in Guyana and the mass suicide? Harvey Milk liked Jim Jones. Yeah. Anyway, at one time, I would have felt it inappropriate for America to honor a homo pedophile with a Navy ship. But as I survey the current landscape, I feel that it fits perfectly with the prevailing spirit of the people and the politicians of this country. Yeah. I think it's just about right. Finally, all charges have been dropped against the final three officers who were to be tried in the Freddie Gray case. The Freddie Gray case has come to an end without a conviction, much to the consternation of Marilyn Mosby, the pit bull prosecutor. She is going to be put back in her cage and possibly disbarred. No, she's probably more likely to be promoted. Yeah, more than likely. But she will have to be uncaged briefly in order to appear in court to defend herself against all the officers who are suing her for false arrest. And we wish them all the best in making sure that that pit bull gets back in a cage. That's the Weekly Worldview this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at Denver Bible Church and American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studio. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.